Businessman Donald Trump is now the 45th president of the United States.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
This week, Fronteras looks at how the Trump administration could affect Texans. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio, and this is Fronteras, a public radio show about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. A major Trump campaign promise is building a border wall. It's still not clear where the wall will be built or if it will actually be a physical barrier along the entire border. Marfa Public Radio's Travis Bubenik reports landowners along the border want to know if the wall will cut through their properties.
So I'm standing in the muddy waters of the Rio Grande in Big Bend National Park. This is a place where Governor Greg Abbott recently said he does not want to see a wall built. He also said there are parts of this broader Big Bend region where a wall would be extremely difficult to build. But this region is huge.
This particular place right here.
A couple hours west of the park near Presidio, Texas, alfalfa farmer Terry Bishop walks to the banks of that same winding river.
In Mexico's, if you toss a rock underhand, you can pretty much hit it.
This isn't the first time he's been faced with the prospect of a wall or fence coming through his property. And it's not the first time he's thought about how it would change this landscape he's known for decades.
You know, as a young teenager, I used to come out in this river and go swimming. And to not even be able to get to it or to see some kind of monstrosity out there would be offensive, of course.
But more importantly, he says a wall would change his livelihood, possibly even ruin it.
If we were denied access to get down here and do our farming operations, what for little farming there is down here would be gone. I mean, if you can't get water, you can't grow anything in the desert without water. That's the bottom line.
So what's he doing about all this? Well, like many people thinking about the wall, Bishop doesn't know what to do, but wait and see.
We all kind of don't know what the situation will be under the Trump administration and how they'll proceed.
That's Roy Brandes. He's an Austin attorney who represented South Texas landowners in disputes against the federal government when the border fence there was being built in the late 2000s. He says there are two key ways landowners can stay plugged in: get to know Border Patrol agents and talk with your neighbors.
Because there's going to be some information out there that the group will have as opposed to maybe an individual.
While Brandes says border landowners should keep a close watch on the government's plans for any new fencing, there aren't many ways to challenge those plans. The only real success his clients had in South Texas was to delay construction for a while or to negotiate how much money they'd get from the government as compensation. So essentially, if the government comes knocking,
you're left with really understanding that it's probably going to happen, and your remedy or your right under the Constitution is to ensure that you get fair and just compensation.
During the campaign, some Borderlands Trump supporters said they'd welcome a wall, but they were a minority. And even though that promise drove Trump to victory, some who scoffed at the idea, like Presidio Mayor John Ferguson, still have faith there's room for a more nuanced debate about how to solve immigration problems without a wall.
If there were anybody who would be willing to listen, we really need, as United States, to consider ourselves not a gated community, but neighbors with these people and see what we can do to work with some of these other countries, you know, to address the root causes of this immigration.
Ferguson's encouraged by Governor Abbott's comments about the wall in West Texas.
So if we could get other people to come in and take a look and say, do you really think that's what the answer is in this part of the world? You know, maybe that might be a chance.
Back on the river, farmer Terry Bishop notes he's got friends and family who work for Customs and Border Protection. While he's not hopeful he could stop a wall from coming here, he hopes those connections could at least help foster honest, open conversations.
I'm hoping that they would come and talk to me and not only me, but the other farmers in this area and landowners that depend on this, and talk to them and say, you know, what is it that we need to be able to continue to do our livelihood, continue our business, and see in what ways we could work together, you know.
It's almost disorienting to hear such measured talk about working together after such a bitterly divided political season. But at this point, that approach is probably Bishop's best chance to have any say in how the promise of a great wall plays out at all. In Presidio, Texas, I'm Travis Bubenik.
25 years ago, the North American Free Trade Agreement was signed in San Antonio, creating the largest free trade zone in the world, linking Canada, the U.S., and Mexico. President Trump wants to renegotiate or scrap NAFTA, claiming it would bring back U.S. jobs. Texas Public Radio's Aaron Schrank reports on NAFTA's track record and how policy changes could have a ripple effect across Texas industries.
A new pickup truck comes off the line nearly once a minute at Toyota's San Antonio factory. The carmaker set up in Texas more than a decade ago to be closer to truck buyers. Plant spokesman Mario Lozoya says there's another reason.
The fact that it's close to the NAFTA corridor.
NAFTA went into effect 23 years ago, boosting cross-border commerce. In the past decade, Toyota says its San Antonio facility has grown to support 7,000 local jobs and become part of a global supply chain that includes Mexican parts manufacturers.
73% of the volume of the Tundra, for example, is made right here on site. It's actually more American than most vehicles on the road. However, some parts do come from Mexico, so logistics through the border is important. So any legislation or any policy that affects that will definitely affect this facility and its workforce.
Donald Trump threatened Toyota on Twitter this month with a border tax, falsely claiming the Japanese automaker was building a new plant in Baja, Mexico. Lozoya says that's not the case.
We've already been building trucks there for years, and we're just going to build a little bit more. So I'm guessing that was the confusion.
One thing that's clear:
no state has benefited from the adoption of NAFTA more than Texas.
Ron Kirk was U.S. Trade Representative under Barack Obama, and before that, the mayor of Dallas. The Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas backs up his claims and says Texas exports grew by 13% per year since NAFTA started.
We do about $3 billion every day of the year in commerce between those three countries. The overwhelming majority of that trade flows through the state of Texas, all up and down I-35.
Most NAFTA impact studies show the agreement hasn't caused huge job losses or economic gains across the country, but's had modest positive impact on U.S. GDP, especially in South Texas. Still, Trump calls NAFTA the worst trade deal ever, which doesn't sit well with Ron Kirk.
One of the real tragedies of our recent presidential debate, trade became such a whipping boy and NAFTA such an easy target.
Kirk says the agreement increases competition and saves consumers money. Thomas Tunstall of UT San Antonio's Center for Economic Development says everyone is still waiting to see what Trump actually does on trade.
You know, trying to undo NAFTA with the stroke of a pen is, number one, probably going to be impossible, both politically as well as from an implementation standpoint, but probably not a good idea economically for either country.
Tunstall says NAFTA does have its problems. He hopes Trump can renegotiate the treaty to include more protections for the environment, labor, and intellectual property.
Trump campaigned on his ability as a deal maker and negotiator. Maybe this will be an opportunity to find out if he's as good as he says he is.
San Antonio's Toyota plant is running at full capacity, producing Tundra and Tacoma pickup trucks jointly with Mexico. Spokeswoman Melissa Sparks points out a giant mechanical claw.
So this is actually the biggest robot we have in the plant. We call it Godzilla.
Godzilla lifts and rotates entire truck frames as automated dollies carry truck beds from point A to point B. Robots like this have revolutionized manufacturing everywhere, but they've also replaced some workers. Like automation, NAFTA has forever changed how and where products are made. Donald Trump and NAFTA critics say it's hurt American workers, but many Texas business leaders say it's not that simple.
Jobs have indeed left, but jobs have also come here. New jobs, a different kind of job.
That's San Antonio Chamber of Commerce President Richard Perez.
And at the end of the day, NAFTA has allowed for the city of San Antonio to really lay a very real claim to being an international trade city.
Pettis hopes that cross-border cooperation continues. Texas has more jobs tied to trade with Mexico than any other state. A Trump trade war could put them in jeopardy. I'm Aaron Schrank.
While many Texans get health care through employers, the number of people who've signed up through the Affordable Care Act has grown. KERA's Lauren Silverman looks at how the health care landscape could change for patients, employers, and hospitals under President Trump.
If there's one clear, consistent message from Donald Trump over the past few years, it's that he hates Obamacare.
I have been so against Obamacare from the beginning, as you know. Repeal and replace.
That's Trump speaking on CNN in 2016. So let's start with what could change for the roughly 1.3 million Texans who bought health insurance under the Affordable Care Act.
You know, anytime you look at people who currently have coverage may lose coverage, that's very troublesome.
Steve Love is president of the Dallas-Fort Worth Hospital Council. He doesn't want to see Obamacare repealed, but he is concerned that there are fewer, more expensive coverage options in 2017. He says that's partly due to the fact that some insurance providers stopped selling ACA products in Texas altogether.
The Affordable Care Act has got some issues with it and some problems. And, you know, even if the Democrats had taken the White House, it still needed some refinements.
Love says if Trump does repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, it's crucial to maintain what is popular, like coverage for people with pre-existing conditions and for children up to the age of 26. And he hopes
it would be a reasonable transition period.
Even before a Republican administration takes office, Texans who get health care through their work have already seen changes. Nearly half of all Texans buy health coverage through their jobs. And last open enrollment period, many noticed more bare bones, high deductible plans.
Those are gaining a lot of traction with employers.
Marianne Faison is president of the Texas Business Group on Health. She says employers are looking for ways to stem the rising costs of health care. They're scrapping expensive, extensive options like PPOs for high deductible plans and health savings accounts.
A recent survey I saw, or that we actually participated in, showed that about 25% of those that offer a high deductible plan with a health savings account or a health reimbursement account are making it the only option now. So that's a really almost a sea change in attitudes of employers.
Health savings or reimbursement accounts make it possible for employees to put aside money and pay for their own health care while avoiding some taxes. Donald Trump is a big fan. Here he is on ABC News.
Well, I'm okay with the savings accounts. I think it's a good idea. It's a very down-the-middle idea. It works. It's something that's proven.
If Trump relies on expanding these accounts, Faison says employees will need to study up and learn a whole new way of paying for health care.
How to go ahead and get your care because you have the money in your savings account and use that money for that instead of avoiding care. And that's a big challenge.
Individual care aside, Faison says midsize and smaller companies in Texas hope a Trump administration eliminates the employer mandate. That requires businesses with 50 or more full-time employees to provide affordable health insurance. Vice President Mike Pence says that mandate has forced employers to fire workers.
Obamacare's employer mandate raised the minimum cost of hiring a full-time worker to $10.30 an hour for larger employers without increasing take-home pay for anybody.
Those numbers come from a report done by the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank. Faison, with the Texas Business Group on Health, says some companies have had to add staff to meet reporting requirements and to avoid paying penalties.
If some of these things are relieved, that will remove a lot of the burden that employers have already invested in. And so I think there's probably a silver lining in the changes that will come along. But again, it's a period of adjustment.
Most people agree that period of adjustment for employers, for patients, it'll be a long stretch, not a quick sprint. For Fronteras, I'm Lauren Silverman.
Coming up on Fronteras, slicing federal money from so-called sanctuary cities.
If we didn't receive the HOPWA funding, we would have to close our doors.
That story and immigrants fighting deportation under Trump. After this, I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio, and this is Fronteras. And on today's show, we're examining President Trump's campaign promises. President Trump promises to cancel federal funding to so-called sanctuary cities that are welcoming to immigrants. KUT's Audrey McGlinchey reports on how that could affect grants to nonprofits.
Todd Logan combs through a rack of thrift store clothes. There's a leather jacket, a pair of painter's pants.
All donated. It's incredible some of the things that that people donate.
Have you ever bought a cool piece here?
Yes, I bought a vase that was really amazing. I had seen it actually like 10 years ago when I went to New York.
And when Logan bought that vase, the money went back to him in a way. All the sales from this North Austin thrift store fund in part medical care and housing for people with HIV through a nonprofit called Project Transitions. Logan estimates the organization he works for has helped 84 people with HIV find or stay in homes in the last year. More than half of these people were formerly homeless, a particularly dangerous situation for someone who's ill.
Homelessness has a particular level of chaos in it. You don't know where you're going to be sleeping. You don't know where you're going to be eating. And that chaos does not facilitate maintenance and care and maintenance on HIV medications.
And while the thrift store brings in some revenue, Project Transitions relies heavily on another form of income, grants from the federal government.
We receive HOPWA funding for our housing programs.
HOPWA stands for Housing Opportunities for Persons with HIV/AIDS. It's a grant administered by the Federal Housing Agency, HUD. The department awards this money to cities, in this case the city of Austin, who then funnel it to providers in the area. But what if, like the many clothing options Logan was shuffling through earlier, there was another costume to try on? In this case, a scenario where Project Transitions did not have access to these federal grants through the city.
If we didn't receive the HOPWA funding, we would have to close our doors.
That risk is not so far-fetched. Donald Trump has said in his first 100 days he'd cancel federal funds to sanctuary cities. That's a big claim. And some legal scholars say Trump could only hold back federal grants related to immigration or law enforcement. But that aside, what exactly is a sanctuary city?
There isn't really a specific definition. It's certainly not codified anywhere or appearing in law.
Alyssa Steglish is a professor at the University of Texas Immigration Clinic in Austin. While there's no official meaning, according to Steglish,
the general framework of being sanctuary is being a welcoming city and recognizing the equal rights and protections of immigrants, regardless of immigration status.
In Austin, the city council has passed symbolic measures declaring the city immigrant friendly. But other cities, like Philadelphia and San Francisco, have official policies instructing law enforcement to ignore warrantless requests to detain people over immigration status. No city in Texas has taken such a hard stance. Though, depending on the criminal offense, Dallas will handle detainment requests on a case-by-case basis. A few days after Election Day, Austin Mayor Steve Adler spoke to a crowd gathered to show support for immigrants outside of City Hall.
I think it's important that Austin protect the residents who are here.
Austin received nearly $43 million in federal grants this past year. And while that's just about 1% of the city's budget, it pays for things Austin relies on, like the dogs that sniff luggage at the airport. In Houston, federal grants make up closer to 7% of the city's budget. With so much potentially at risk, it's clear why some local leaders keep the phrase sanctuary city out of their mouths. At that rally outside of Austin City Hall, a reporter asked Mayor Adler whether Austin is a sanctuary city. He talked around the phrase, invoking former Austin Police Chief Art Acevedo, who now heads up the Houston Police Department.
You know, I am a real supporter of Chief Acevedo's policy, which is to enforce laws, but do it in a way that preserves the relationship between police and all communities so that everybody in our community feels safe.
With no formal legal definition of sanctuary city and doubt over whether Trump's plan could affect all federal grants, it's unclear how concerned some Texas cities should be about the next 4 years. Instead, some may turn their eyes to the state legislative session. Senator Charles Perry has filed a bill that would cancel state grants to cities refusing to detain people at the request of the Federal Immigration Agency. While similar bills failed to pass in 2015, 2017 is a new year. For Fronteras, I'm Audrey McGlinchey.
Another one of President Trump's campaign promises, revoke President Obama's Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, a program benefiting thousands of young immigrants. A West Coast campaign is providing information on how to deal with DACA under Trump's administration. Jean Guerrero of KPBS reports.
Alliance San Diego held a press conference about its new campaign, Rise Together. It aims to empower immigrants who've benefited from President Obama's DACA program. DACA gives deportation relief and temporary work permits to people who arrived in the U.S. illegally before the age of 16.
Trump said he would end the program.
Hand in hand, with our heads held high, let's rise together.
Spread the message. If you have DACA, renew now.
If not, it may not be wise to apply.
Andrea Guerrero, Executive Director of Alliance San Diego, says people should refrain from seeking DACA if they don't have it already, because it's uncertain what Trump will do with their applications.
They will be in limbo. They will have come out of the shadows. They will be known to the government, but they won't have DACA. The program will end. They will be in a vulnerable position.
The organization is sharing the video online in three languages. Guerrero says the campaign also includes informational sessions throughout the county, at education centers, health centers, faith centers, and more. About 40,000 immigrants in San Diego are eligible for DACA, such as Itzel Guillen.
I have been able to attend college. I'm in my senior year at San Diego State University, where I'm pursuing a political science degree. And I know that I'm not the only one. I'm not the only success story.
The Rise Together campaign will continue all year. For Fronteras, I'm Jean Guerrero.
And that's it for Fronteras and our stories from the Southwest this week. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org. Alexis Yancey produced this broadcast. Shelley Koffler is our executive producer. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Thanks for joining us. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.